The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so the weekend was going to be about, I think, Duke-UCF, right? Is that where we're going with this tournament? Because everybody else is just winning across the board. Duke-UCF last night was the game of the weekend. It was the game in the story of the weekend, right? There was nothing else that was bigger than that. There wasn't a big, big moment in the NBA that sort of shifted the playoffs picture, like Giannis Antetokounmpo is not out for the whole season or any other news. So my thought was that the biggest story of the weekend was going to be Duke-UCF and how close the Knights were to upsetting Duke and destroying brackets, but making people happy across the country outside of Duke land. But then Rob Gronkowski announced his retirement, and that became the story of the weekend. The NCAA tournament could have stolen the weekend from even a Rob Gronkowski retirement, which is a big deal and a big story that we've got to get to and we've got to handle. But the reality of it is it didn't do that. It didn't produce that. Now, there are two ways to look at what's been going on with this tournament. One, it's been going heavy chalk. If you love chalk, you like what's going on so far. But on the flip side of it, you're getting some really good matchups in the Sweet 16. We are starting to weed out, let's be honest, the teams that are fun for a little bit, but in the end, you don't want to see these teams go too deep. If you want good matchups, this is what you're getting. The problem with that is this tournament becomes boring. This tournament lacks a little bit of appeal. You can give me all the great matchups that you're going to get in Thursday and Friday Sweet 16 matchups, which, because you have all the good teams in, are going to lead to great Elite Eight matchups, and then down the road lead to great Final Four to National Championship. But it does lack a little bit of flavor. It does lack a little bit of, hey, let's find out more about this school. You've given us the entire year of these schools. We've heard more about these schools than anything else, but we're missing this school. And that is what seems to be missing from this tournament. There's no Florida Gulf Coast for us to wrap our hands around and embrace. There's none of that. But you're getting some good matchups. We're going to talk about that coming up, including the Duke-UCF game. And how many of you, even if it destroyed everything on your bracket, were just simply rooting for the Knights to pull off this amazing upset? That coming up next. It's SB Nation AM.
Is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio
and on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. Do you find the NCAA tournament boring now? I mean, or are you just excited about the matchups that you're going to get on Thursday. I mean, if you, again, if you like chalk, you got to like this tournament, right? I mean, Oregon is a 12 seed, and that's pretty much it, right? Other than that, it's blue blood basketball. It's ones and fours and ones and fives and threes and twos. I mean, that's what you're getting this weekend. Okay, so listen, can I be honest with you about this? I know the tournament is about upsets, and I know the tournament is about Cinderellas, and believe me, I get it, and I miss it too, right? I love a little bit of a Florida Gulf Coast, as I mentioned earlier. I love a little bit of, even last year with Loyola Chicago. I like that flavor. I get it. But can I be honest with you? I'm looking at Thursday's schedule right now, and I'm getting Tennessee-Purdue. Purdue was on top of the Big Ten, right, during the regular season. I'm going to get Texas Tech, a really good team, going up against Michigan, a John Beilein defense. I'm getting Florida State, who I love and like watching play. They distribute the basketball really well, against the highest scoring team in the tournament in Gonzaga. I've got LSU with a chip on its shoulder because their coach got suspended, going up against Tom Izzo and Michigan State. And LSU gets there by a layup with about 2 seconds remaining. Auburn and Bruce Pearl, the SEC tournament champions, are going up against North Carolina. Duke is staying in the conference to take on Virginia Tech. And Houston, Kentucky. I get Houston, Kentucky in this tournament. And so do you. A Houston team that has 33 wins on the season so far, to 3 losses going up against Kentucky and John Calipari. And I'm supposed to cry because Wofford's not in this thing? And I'm supposed to feel like I've been cheated because UC Irvine isn't making his presence felt in this tournament? Look, again, when anybody tells me this tournament is about Cinderella, I tell them they're wrong. This tournament is about crowning a champion. Cinderella is just a part of it. It's not about Cinderella. Cinderella just makes an appearance, but this is about crowning the champion of college basketball. And if Cinderella wants to make it to the end of the dance, more than happy to welcome her. But more than likely that clock strikes midnight eventually and the party moves on. I mean, I'm sorry. I look at these matchups and I'm actually excited that we're going to get some great basketball games, because we haven't gotten great basketball games so far. The fact that UCF took Duke down to the wire is phenomenal, because it's the only really game this weekend that was enjoyable. I mean, Tennessee went into overtime against Iowa, and that's great, but if you didn't watch that game, you know why they went into overtime? Because Tennessee blew a 25-point lead in that game. Other than that, it's been over by halftime. It's been over early in the second half. And some years you get it. Some years you get a VCU or Butler or, again, a Loyola Chicago, and they make all of the noise and they gain all the attention. And we're reminded of where some of the schools are even located, right? What's it like? I remember with Florida Gulf Coast, because they're one of my favorite stories, because Andy Enfield, and that was a really fun team. Remember they were dunking all over Georgetown in the tournament? But remember, like, Florida Gulf Coast, you go, oh, well, obviously I know where that school is located. It's located in Florida near the Gulf Coast. But when they showed the campus, it was like college in paradise. It was like the prettiest campus I've ever seen. It was like, this is an amazing place to go to school. And, oh, by the way, their college basketball team is awesome. And they're fun. I'll say, okay. So, again, I don't mind you getting into the party, but let me ask you a question. What if all these teams were out and you had all the other double-digit seeds that were in? Would you find this more compelling? Would you be more apt to watch? Would you cancel all your Thursday and Friday night plans to make sure you were by a television to watch these great Cinderella stories? Or if you're really watching, how about Auburn, North Carolina? You know what Bruce Pearl said at the end of their win against Kansas, which I found amazing? He simply said, "We're a better team than Kansas. And if you ask Bill," meaning Bill Self, "he'll tell you the same thing." Auburn's playing great basketball right now. And they're going to get a challenge by North Carolina, who could do all sorts of things. They're so versatile, it's crazy. That's kind of what I want to see. I mean, listen, I think Houston, Kentucky is great. I think it's a great, I love the Cougars. I love the way they play. I love it. I love Corey Davis, Armani Brooks. I love them all. Kentucky, this is where John Calipari's got to shine. This is the tournament. This is where John Calipari's got to shine. This is one thing that makes this tournament great is this. We always talk about college basketball, college football, right? And in college football, one of the things that some of us, and I put myself in the us category, get a little nervous about when people talk about expanding the college football playoff is, and I'm more of a traditionalist in this point, I don't want college football to lose the thing that I like about it, which is there's an urgency in every game to the season. There are consequences to losing games in college football during the regular season. You really can't, right? And if you do, don't lose by that much and don't lose embarrassingly, because it could come back to haunt you when it comes to polling and the way the committee views you. But with the committee, you are allowed to take a break. You are allowed to have that one miscue. I was always afraid with the expansion of college football that you just end up watering down the regular season. Because college basketball has proven time and time again, you don't need to watch college basketball during the regular season at all, unless you're just into the entertainment factor. But if you're freaking out in January because your team lost on the road, you've missed what this sport is, because the sport is this. It always has been this. What we get in March, and Duke and North Carolina and Kentucky, and list them all, they never experience any sense of urgency during the regular season until this time. Zion Williamson and the Duke Blue Devils have never, ever faced a game during the season in which they had to win until now. Now, some of the Cinderella schools have done that. Some of the Cinderella schools got in because they made a big run in their conference tournament where it's one and done and you better win this thing because nobody else is going in, getting in. Because nobody else from your conference is getting in, so you got to win the conference tournament in order to do that. Kentucky, Dukes, the North Carolinas, Michigan States—I mean, list them all. They don't have that. There's never a sense of urgency until to this point. So when you watch the Duke UCF game yesterday, that was kind of the feeling like, okay, this is the time where Duke is tested, where there's real consequence to it, right? Where if they make a mistake, this is going to be at the end of the road. At the end of the game, when Zion Williamson goes after Taco Fall, right, goes right to him, gets the basket and the free throw, if that was a charge, that changes the game. He takes a gamble. But if that was a charge, Duke is out. If that kid, if the Dawkins kid makes the shot on the tippet, the game is over. That's it. Game done. RJ Barrett gets a rebound off a missed free throw. The game is, if he doesn't do that, the game could have been over. This is where the consequences of losing really matter. College football gives you that week in and week out. You better be careful in October, and you better be careful in November. And oh, heck, you might as well get careful in September, too. But in college basketball, Pete Futek, who covers college football better than almost anybody I know, had a great tweet over the weekend that says, this tournament is just a reminder you don't have to watch the regular season. I watch the regular season, and sometimes I don't know why, because there is no sense of real urgency or real feeling like, you know, these games in conference matter. I talk to college basketball fans and they go, well, I'm concerned with seeding. No, you're not. You're not concerned with seeding. Stop that. It's nonsense. You're not concerned with seeding in January. You probably just are rooting to win because you want to win. That's it. It's pride. That's it. But you know as well as I do, if you're rooting for a really, really good team in the top 25 and top 30 in KenPom, you're going to the tournament. So again, I look at these games that are coming up this weekend, and I love them. I mean, I absolutely love them. I find them intriguing. I want to know about this player versus this player because, listen, these are the teams we paid attention to all year. Does it miss a little bit of flavor? Of course it does, because most of these 16s that we've had for years and years and years include a team we have to kind of find on a map, or we have to Google. Sometimes we don't even know what conference they're in, right? But this time we don't. This time we don't. We have 16 teams, and a majority of them are teams that have been near the top of college basketball, in the conversation of college basketball all year long. And again, the only one, the only team, and if you can call them that, the only team that's quote-unquote spoiling the party is Oregon as a 12 seed. But other than that, 3-2 matchup in Texas Tech, Michigan, 3-2 matchup in Purdue, Tennessee. You look at Friday's matchups, it's a 4-1 Duke, Virginia Tech, 3-2 matchup LSU, Michigan State, 3-2 matchup Houston, Kentucky, 1-4 Duke, Virginia Tech, as I mentioned before, 1-5 Auburn, North Carolina, 1-4 Florida State and Gonzaga. And that's it. So is the tournament boring? Yeah, it lacks some flavor. But hopefully Thursday and Friday, it goes back to, okay, this is really good basketball against really good teams. But who knows? Maybe out of the eight games, seven of them are double-digit blowout losses. 800-777-2907, your thoughts on that. Also, hit me up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. Hit Ron up as well at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Coming up, the biggest news of the weekend, which was the Rob Gronkowski retirement. And what do we remember and what will we remember about the great Rob Gronkowski career? That's coming up next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, you can now earn O reward points online and at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. Earn points any way you shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You'll receive a $5 reward for every 150 points you earn. Visit orewards.com and become an O'Reilly O Rewards member today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. So I said, Ron, that the UCF upset of Duke, if that were to have happened, that would have been the biggest story of the weekend. But I think Rob Gronkowski's retirement is a bigger story because the NCAA tournament didn't produce any major story.
I agree.
They just didn't. They could have, and they didn't. So Rob Gronkowski is the story of the weekend.
Yeah, but it was almost anticlimactic. I wanted Rob to retire with like a more of a Gronk way.
I do, too. I just kind of saying on Instagram, like, I'm done. I think I wanted... Yeah. Like do it in a TV special or something. I don't know what I wanted from shoot himself out of a cannon that says I quit.
Cruise ship.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I mean, there's got to be a better way, right?
Yeah, exactly. Listen, there's two ways to. Here's the way I look at Rob Gronkowski. Okay, I think he's the best tight end ever. I think he not only caught for more yards per game than any tight end, but he blocked great. There are tight ends in this league who have been in this league who are, we remember, but they don't do the two things you want from tight ends. You want them to catch passes, but you also need them to be really good blockers. And some of them haven't been really good blockers. He has been a really good blocker. But his personality, I know the one thing I've always respected about him is I wonder sometimes if Rob Gronkowski is playing, if he's really smarter than he appears, because he always appears like he's the biggest frat boy in the NFL, but he does some very intelligent things. Like he doesn't spend his NFL money. He invests it. He saves it. And I think he realizes that there is also money to be made by playing this role, by playing this part that I think he takes advantage of. I think he likes this sort of frat boy image that he has, this party image that he has. And I think that that's him in a way, but I also think he realized, oh, this way is really profitable. People like this. They'll buy what I sell if I play sort of the frat boy ogre football player kind of goof, but deep down I'm a lot more intelligent than people think. So there's the Rob Gronkowski personality part that I'll miss, and there's the football player that I'll miss, except when he played the Steelers, because he used to tear up the Steelers. He tore up everybody. But isn't it great that his last, like, not only does he go out like Elway and Manning, he goes out with a championship, but he also was instrumental in the main reason the Patriots won that championship. He caught the 29-yard pass that Brady threw down to the 2-yard line that set up the only touchdown of the game. It was one of the only memorable plays of Super Bowl 53. And he made the catch. But I'm going to miss him. I really am. I know there was, he was, he was controversial from a standpoint of there were like going on the Gronk cruise, like the party cruise. Gronk got away with that. And I think there's a legitimate argument made by people who said, listen, there's a lot of NFL players that if they did that, if they had a party cruise, let's drink and let's go on a boat and let's have a good time, they couldn't get away with that. There would have been repercussions of that. Their image would have been tainted. The team might have had a problem with it. For whatever reason, Gronk, that's sellable to Gronk. That's acceptable with Gronk. But other players, if they had pulled that off, imagine if Odell Beckham Jr., for example, had tried to do that. Like, imagine if Odell Beckham with the Giants at a time where they were in the playoffs and whatnot, and he sold a cruise. Remember, he got in trouble just for being on a boat the week of the playoffs. But imagine if the offseason he said, oh, forget it. Forget, I'm not going to go during the season, but after the season, come join me on a drink fest cruise party ship. It's never going to end. He'd be ripped for it. And everybody knows that. People know that he would have been ripped for it. But Gronk can get away with that. Gronk's personality allows him for this to be acceptable and almost comical and almost funny and almost kind of something you'd want to do. Maybe you wouldn't want to go on a cruise, a party cruise with Dez Bryant, for example, or maybe not want to go on a party cruise with Tom Brady for that matter. But you'd want to go on with one with Gronk. You'd want to party with Gronk. It seems like most people like that, but don't miss look at Gronk, if that's a term. His personality and gregarious nature and fun party was part of a Hall of Fame career, an amazing career for a tight end. He became such a vital weapon for Tom Brady, even as Brady got older, that security blanket, if you will. Always talked about with Julian Edelman, right? But Gronk was really his security blanket. Gronk was, when he played, made that team so much better and so more dangerous. He demanded double teams that teams could not afford to have against a quarterback like Brady, and yet he forced it. But when he was on and when he caught the ball, he rumbled for yardage. That's the key with the tight end, right? They don't catch as much as your wide receivers, but when they do, you get yardage from it. He got averaged nearly 70 yards a game for a tight end. That's crazy. That's crazy. And it was a part of the Josh McDaniel offensive system, but it was also because of his immense talent. His immense talent to catch a ball virtually anywhere, to even when he was double teamed, and the ability to sort of be a weapon in that Patriots offense. And people are like, yeah, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. No. There's no question about this. He's going to the Hall of Fame. Stop. You don't even have to debate it. You don't even have to have a conversation about it. He's one of the best tight ends who have ever played the game. Now, if this happened to any other team, you'd be talking about, okay, what does this mean? Where do they go? What happens now? But with the Patriots, you almost go, okay, well, we'll see. We'll see how they replace him. You can't replace him, right? But you can only hope that somebody fills the position adequately. I mean, again, when you lose, if you lose a Hall of Fame player and the attitude is, we'll just find somebody else, that person isn't a Hall of Fame player. This is not the case with Rob Gronkowski. I'm going to find another Rob Gronkowski, but you can find a tight end and manipulate your offense around that person and see what happens. But with the Patriots, it almost feels like they know how to do this. They know how to bring in guys. They lose guys and they replace guys and they find a way to do it. Whether it's we don't use the tight end as much as we used to, but it's still effective. However, Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels works the offense. But make no mistake. I mean, this guy was so amazingly good. And yet a lot of times that personality was really part of the Gronk lore and the Gronk attraction, if you will. He just seemed like a likable guy. Right? I mean, he seemed like a guy you'd want to hang out with.
Totally. He's the type of guy you want to have a couple beers with.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just
and whether that's a good thing
out.
Or not, I don't know, but you know you're going to have a lot of fun. You're going to enjoy yourself.
That's the other thing. I mean, you think about, now listen, I don't want to speak for his personal life. I don't know what he's dealing with. Like I always say, like people, they have a great life. You don't know. We don't know. I mean, they only tell you what they make public. It's almost like Facebook, right? They only tell you what they make public. But my perception of Gronk is he's a guy who has lived an amazingly blessed life in which he has gotten all the things that people think they want, fame and money, these big, huge accomplishments, like, you know, winning a Super Bowl and becoming a Pro Bowler and, you know, going to the Hall of Fame. And now he's 29 years old. He's got a boatload of money. He's got all of the options. If he wants to get into a little action movie, or if he wants to go into wrestling, or if he wants to do some commentary with something, whatever it is that he wants to do, he now has an open field. He could write. I hope he writes a book. I hope he writes a book. I'd be interested in reading it, you know, about his memoirs, about life with the Patriots and him and growing up and whatnot. I'd be interested in reading his background.
I just want photos.
Yeah, I do too. I know, right?
But he has a behind the scenes party.
He has 30. He is 30 years old, and now the world is wide open to him for the next 50, whatever years, however long he's got on this planet. And that's, I think he did it exactly the way he wanted to. He's leaving the game healthy, and he's leaving the game a Hall of Famer. Good for you, Gronk.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. So how many of you were rooting for UCF? Even though it could rip your bracket to shreds, I kind of wanted to see it. I'll be honest with you.
It was one of those moments where you care about your bracket at the beginning of the game, but by the time midway through the second half happens, you're like, who cares?
Yeah, I thought
I'm not going to win anyways.
Are you kidding? I was like, you know what? This is
blow
great.
It all up. Man, I have Duke going all the way, but I'm like, come on. I want to see more of tackle fail.
He's awesome. He is awesome. Like 7'6". The one thing is, I remember working in minor league basketball. We would have guys that would be on other teams that were like 7 foot, 7'1". And you're like, why aren't they in the NBA? You can't teach size. And then you watch them play and they're like, they can't handle the ball. Like their hands are like gloves, right? They have the size, but you know what? Everything else is just exploitable. And you watch him and it's like, oh my God, he's got size and talent. Like he actually can do this. Like he can do all this stuff. That was a good game. And UCF is going to have that one, those moments where they're going to look back. They may not want to watch the tape because, you know, like the coaching staff, yeah. Because there was so many times where they're like, oh my God.
So many missed opportunities.
One position. Like we were one position away from getting that rebound, or we were one. How in the world is the ball? The ball went out of the rim twice on that last play. When they had the ball with 8 seconds, the layup almost goes in. It goes kind of around the rim and out. And then the tip-in almost goes in and kind of goes around the rim and out. I remember thinking at any moment, both shots were on the rim, kind of hovering there. And I remember thinking both of them were going to drop, and neither one of them did. And this is the thing. Sometimes you got to get lucky in the NCAA tournament, and Duke benefited. A lot of it because they were smart and they played good, solid basketball. I mean, I thought Zion Williamson's going after fall and just saying, I'm going to attack you and go at him. That was great because there could have been a charge that sent the ball the other way, but he went after the basket, get the basket in the bucket. God, that was great. Really great. But the other thing about it was, look, Duke has lost in this tournament early before. I mean, I think there was a couple of years. Twice they lost in the first round, right? I think VCU beat them 1 year. So they've been upset in the tournament, but they haven't had a team like this that has been upset early in the tournament. The team that is so well put together and with one of the top players in college basketball, number one draft pick, that team has not been really upset. So watching that, watching that potential, I enjoyed. Because look, I'm like anybody else. I'm not a Duke fan. I don't know why they rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know. Maybe it was early in my career in, you know, covering college basketball, looking at college basketball. They were good. I mean, they've been good for me. They've been good since '86. They went to the finals against Louisville. They had Mark Allery, and they were playing Purvis Elson, Never Nervous Purvis, and Denny Crum in the Reunion Arena in Dallas, Texas. And they almost won the national championship. And then they were good with Leitner and Hurley. And, you know, even without those guys, they were still making Final Four appearances and playing for the title and, you know, all of that in the 90s. And then they had the moment where Krzyzewski's back bothered him and he was out for a while and they weren't that good. And, you know, they were kind of like 1 year they went 18, they had 18 wins, which is like for a Duke team that doesn't win 20 games. But, you know, Krzyzewski was out. He was hurt with the back problems. They had to go with an assistant coach. But he's got so many, like Mike Krzyzewski has that tree now of coaches. It's like Belichick. He's got those, that tree now of coaches. And Johnny Dawkins was one of them. Johnny Dawkins was on that 86 team. And Johnny Dawkins was one of them. And he was very emotional at the end of the game because, you know, he wants to win. It's his thing. But, you know, Johnny Dawkins lost. And Johnny Dawkins' kid plays. He was the kid that was made to win for the tip-in and missed it. And yet Dawkins was very gracious to Coach K. At the end of the game, I think if my kid missed, if I was coaching my kid and he missed a potential life-changing basket, because let's be honest with you, that's a life-changing basket. You beat Zion Williamson and Duke at the last second, you're going to go down in history. I was wondering if they had pulled this off, because as I was watching the last few minutes, I kept thinking, okay, national championship Central Florida, where would you rank the win over Duke in the NCAA tournament game over the fact that you were like you were top of a poll, one poll a couple years ago to win a share of the national title.
So funny you said that, because one of the thoughts that went through my mind is if Duke wins it all, do they lay claim that they were the runner up?
Yeah. Good point. Oh boy, because the school knows how to market itself, doesn't it?
I was going to say, if Duke runs the table and just absolutely demolishes the rest of its opponents, because this was a good wake up call for them,
right?
And you know, it's like, oh man, we almost lost. Now let's just make sure we're up by 30 the rest of the way. You know, UCF could lay claim like we were the only ones that took them to the wire.
Yeah, that's true.
We're right? Runner up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Duke lost in the first round in 2014. They lost in the first round in 2012. I was just looking it up. In 2007 and in 1996 when they were terrible. But a couple of years ago, I went to, you know, South Carolina doesn't have a ton of athletic accomplishments. And so, like, the biggest moments for me as a Gamecock were the baseball team winning the national championship, because that was the first national title in a major sport for the school. And then they won it again the next year. So they won back-to-back national championships in baseball. The football team beating Florida in 2005, for me, was the biggest football win, because it was against the Gators, who throttled them, and it was Spurrier against Urban Meyer. It was Meyer's first year. Spurrier had just started at South Carolina, and he beat Florida. A really good Florida team. 11 win seasons and whatnot. But the one that is the biggest for me is beating Duke in the second round of the NCAA tournament two years ago. Because, A, I didn't think it was going to happen, and it was one of those games, and I swear, this is how pessimistic I am, which is really sad, and I could totally understand why people wouldn't want to hang with me. I'm the kind of Gamecock fan that I'm not kidding, Ron. I am the other shoe is going to drop at any second type of fan with my school. At any moment, something's going to blow up. Can I give you an example? Do you remember over the fall, South Carolina was playing Florida and you were texting me when they were winning? They were beating Florida really big. You remember that game? They were beating Florida by, I think, 3 touchdowns.
I thought for sure. You know, because I know the Desiri household is a Civil War
exactly
moment.
We have a dual flag that we used to hang outside of our house every year during the football season.
And if I remember, I think I said, "Are you about to just raise the South Carolina flag or something?"
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
They were up by 3 touchdowns, right? And they lost. They lost.
Sorry.
Right? It happens all the time. There is a feeling of inevitability, like this isn't going to go the way I want. Right. So 2 years ago, I'm watching them play Duke, and I'm like, they're winning. Like, they're making shots. Like, they're winning. They're not only winning, they're looking good doing this. Like, nothing Duke is doing is working. Duke's not getting, like, taking a lead, a comfortable lead. It was going back and forth, and I remember thinking towards the end, I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to pull this off. And I remember screaming, and my wife was like, shut up, it's loud. And I was like, I don't care. They just beat Duke. Like, if nothing else happens, they beat Duke. And so when you win an NCAA tournament game, when you have an upset like Central Florida had, UCF had yesterday, my God, it's amazing if it can come against Duke. Like I don't even think Duke was the number one seed in the tournament that year. But this was not only the number one seed. This was Zion Williamson, for crying out loud. And UCF almost pulled this off. So I can relate, because 2 years ago my school did it, and it's one of the biggest accomplishments that the school that I have as a school. I can imagine what UCF would have done with this little gem if they had pulled this off. You're right. They would have called themselves the national runner-up if Duke won the title. They might do that because they are really good at marketing themselves. They do that with football. Now they'd have it in baseball. Basketball too. God, that was great. Problem is, man, I didn't pay attention to UCF until they beat Houston in college.
No, no one really did. I mean, the only thing we really knew about UCF is that they had a 7'6" guy who holds a basketball like I hold a softball.
Yeah, I know, right? You see the picture of him with Tracy Wolfson?
Yes.
Oh my God. She comes up to like his waist. Well, I mean, she's tiny and he's gigantic.
It was on Friday night when they won their, I can't even remember who they beat. Was it VCU?
Yeah, VCU. Yep.
When she interviewed him after the game, she is like literally stretching as much as she can to get the microphone up to his head.
Yeah.
And he's bending down. I was like, she's like, you know, I mean, someone needed to go get her a stepladder.
That's right. That's right. By the way, because I have a curiosity mind, I had to look up Duke's losses in the early round. And they lost to Mercer. Do you remember when they lost to Mercer a couple years ago? What a big deal that was.
Yeah.
I had to look up where Mercer was. I was like, oh, that's in Georgia. Wow, that's pretty awesome. Then they lost to Lehigh. In 2012, they lost to Lehigh by 5 points, which is pretty significant. Mercer beat it by seven. I mean, so those were the two early, latest examples of them losing in the first round. So they've had early upsets before, but that game last night was like, oh my God, you felt like if UCF had pulled it off because of Zion Williamson, it would have been a really big deal for years to come. Like we today's Cinderella. This is funny. I'll give you an example. Ja Morant had such a good first game, right? He even had a very good game against Florida State, but they lost. And there was a headline in one of the articles I was reading over the weekend that said, Ja Morant's tournament run will never be forgotten. Yes, it will be forgotten. Let's not get hyperbolic here. This tournament, it produces so many stories like his that you will forget. Even if he goes to the NBA and is a star, you'll kind of go, oh yeah, I remember he had a good tournament run, but you'll forget who he beat in the opening round. You'll forget that it was Marquette. You might even forget that he had a triple-double. You won't remember the line. You'll remember some of the good passes, but he'll go in the way of all of these other players in the NCAA tournament history that have had their moment in the sun, right? Vanderbilt basketball just fired Bryce Drew, their head coach. Bryce Drew, does that name sound familiar to you? Yeah, he was the kid from Valparaiso who hit that shot eons ago at some tournament against I don't remember. That's how this tournament is, right? It's just like these names are like, I remember something about him. He did something in the tournament because there's so much for our brains to process. There's 64 teams a year that's in this thing, 68 that are in this thing. And you can't remember 64. Everybody. Yeah, let's call it 64. I have to be polite. You know how I am. But there's so many games and so many tournament games and so many moments. It is really hard to remember everybody. Yes, Ja Morant, right now you won't forget him, but 10 years from now, you won't even remember who he played for. You'll be like, oh, that's right, Murray State. That's right. I mean,
unless he's able to make a name for himself at the next level.
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
Well, no, even if he does that, did I brought this up last week, right? I brought this up last week when I said the last triple-double that occurred in the tournament was Draymond Green. How many people remembered that Draymond Green had a triple-double in the tournament? Draymond Green is an NBA star.
Or I guess
and
at
people
this
don't
point,
remember that he had a triple-double.
I guess at this point, what team did he play for?
That's right. Right. You're right.
We know him as the Warriors.
Right? People might not remember it was Michigan State. Right? I mean, I was thinking, there was a kid who played for Michigan State in 2000 that played Florida. Right? And because I was struggling to remember his name. It was Mateen Cleaves. And I remember going, this is what this tournament will do to you. You'll forget these guys. This is a forget. You'll just because there's too much to remember. There's too many names to remember. There's too many moments. You can only handle so much. So, you know, it's too bad, but that's just the way this tournament works. That's just the way it goes. 800-777-2907 or on Twitter at @TonyDRadio and Ron Culver at Ron Culver with two N's, please, on Ron. That's coming up next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, did you hear Shaquille O'Neal has joined the board of Papa John's? He's going to be shilling pizza any minute now. He bought 9 restaurants in the Atlanta area and is now on the board of directors. Because of Shaq's involvement with the company, the stock went up 4% and over 17% over the past year.
Will it become the official pizza of the NBA?
It might, right? Peyton Manning is involved in it. I don't know if he still is, but remember when Papa John got in trouble, used the N-word in a conference call, and he's no longer the face of the franchise. Now Shaquille O'Neal could be the face of Papa John's Pizza.
Papa John's and General Insurance.
Remember? Yeah, I know, right? Is that
Icy Hot.
Icy Hot. Yeah, that's my favorite one. Icy, yeah. Way to go. Way to go, Shaquille O'Neal. He's always pitching cool stuff. But the one thing about it is... I think Shaq is very much like Rob Gronkowski. Shaq is a brilliant businessman. Like he was on Real Sports talking about his business. He's a very, very smart investor, very good with his money. You know, kind of pretends like he's just a crazy old Shaq, just hanging out, having a good time, doing. But he's a shrewd businessman. And I think Gronkowski is too. I think Gronkowski is a really smart guy. I think both of these guys are really, they're likable. I think they do good on camera. I think they do good selling products. But Shaq is going to be the new face of pizza. I mentioned Peyton Manning how much I like Peyton Manning as a personality. And somebody on Twitter over the weekend, must have heard one of our best ofs or something, said, "What in God's name are you talking about? Peyton Manning has the personality of an eggplant." Eggplant? I don't think Peyton Manning is the personality of an eggplant. I mean, I like eggplant.
His brother does.
His brother does. Yeah. What made you think Peyton Manning is... I mean, look, maybe it's an act. I get it. But Peyton Manning's personality is a little more out there than, I don't know, some vegetable.
Maybe it's just that southern draw he has.
Yeah, it's southern draw. But congratulations, Shaq. That's a nice nice investment. Well done. SB Nation AM rolling along on SB Nation Radio. On a Monday, getting more tournament action as we head into the week.